So it's a real pleasure to have Robin White with us. I know from talking with some of our guides who do the volunteer tours during the week and the weekends, the sort of delight they expressed on learning that a suite of Robin's prints and also Florence were to be in the in this exhibition. Robin's show Island Life, which was here 3 or 4 years ago, is well remembered by them and was a much loved show. Robin, of course, is known as a kind of chronicler of the lives and sights that most of us glimpse and pay little attention to in passing from the passenger window, you know, a little facade in Mongaweka or Hooper's Inlet in Otago. The gallery also has wonderfully full holdings of the print series that Robin made while living on the island of Tarawa in the Republic of Kiribati. And Robin returned to New Zealand, I think in 1999, is that right?
Yeah,
to the Wairarapa, which has become a kind of an actor and a character in her recent works. And Robin's with us, she was in Tahiti about 24 hours ago, is it? Something like that. So that's a great example of a, you know, a citizen of the Pacific. So we thank you for your stamina. And Robin is soon to appear in the huge exhibition, the Asia Pacific Triennial, at Queensland Art Gallery. So welcome, Robin.
Thank you. Thanks very much. It's a great pleasure to be here, and I very much enjoyed and learnt a lot from listening to Mary and also to Fiona. And what they have shared has also links to, you know, what I was thinking of perhaps touching on with my own work. So we'll talk a bit about my mum, and then we're going to go into the other room, right? So just a bit conscious of time, that's all. So maybe I can give a little bit of history to this particular image here, my mother, Florence. This was painted when my mother, as mothers do, except for me, because I'm not such a good mother, perhaps. But when the first child is born of your beloved child, you want to be there. And I was really grateful that my own mother came to be with me when my first child was born. And he's here right now, which is lovely. It's kind of nice to meet up with my mum and my son all in one hit. It's great. Get off the plane and here they are. Anyway, she came and she was with me for about, I think, 2 or 3 weeks. And so I came back from the hospital with this new baby and went straight into my studio to start working again. And she came with me and sort of helped out. And that's when I did the drawings towards this painting. So that was 1974 when I finally finished it. Actually, there's a little bit of information here which isn't quite correct, but on the other hand, it doesn't really matter all that much. It's a reference to why she's looking so sad, that she'd been recently widowed. Actually, this was the last visit that my mother paid to me in Dunedin, where I was living at the time, before my father died. She realised that she couldn't visit again. She couldn't leave him again. And it was, in fact, it was about 4 or 5 years after that he died. And then she used to come and stay with me a lot after that and help me out when I was working. Anyway, here she is. And I, you know, nothing comes out of a vacuum. Talking about this painting, I really feel I need to pay tribute to my teachers. And they are numerous and of great standing. You know, I've had some very, very good teachers. And some of them have been dead a long time because they lived back in 14th century Italy and so on. You might recognize perhaps Giotto or Duccio in this painting. But I was introduced to the works of the 14th and 15th century Italians when I was at art school. And somehow their work had a resonance for me, partly to do with what they were talking about and, you know, what art is about, just as Fiona said, is an important aspect of it, or I feel that anyway. And partly also the way in which they approached the task of saying what they had to say. There's something about that era of Italian art which seemed to me very pure and mathematical in a pure sense. The structure of it, the lack of ego in a sense, the discipline of it. It's hard for me to describe why it had a resonance for me. And of course, it all came to me off pages of books, and it was only 2 years ago that I ever got to Italy to see the real thing, which was a revelation again. And I'm thinking, oh God, I'm 60-something and I don't know anything. Anyway, that's okay. We spend our whole life learning. But it was that idea of, you know, that centralized image, centralized sense of structure and balance. And another teacher that I had who had a big influence on not just me but a whole generations to come, I suppose, as well, is Colin McCann. He was my teacher at Elam. And I know I've told this story many times, but forgive me, I'll tell it again in case you haven't heard it. But one day he walked into our painting studio with two books and he put them down on the floor. One of them was a book about, one was a book, Janssen's History of Art, which was our text at Elam in those days, great big thick book. And he opened it up at Roger van der Weyden's Descent from the Cross, which I saw. I went to Madrid and saw it just a couple of years ago. Wow, it was amazing. But anyway, there it was in this book. And the other one was Blue Poles. You know.
Pollock.
I have just come in. Forgive me. And he talked about structure. And that had a, you know, you have these wonderful gem-like moments in your life when you receive a lesson that is deeply profound. I mean, you could spend 3 years doing a bachelor degree and not learn such things. You know, that was an amazing moment for me. And so, I mean, you can see resonances of those lessons from 14th, 15th century Italian art and looking at Roger van der Weyden in this painting, but also the Dutch painters, as Mary was saying, where they use that the way of carrying a narrative or telling you a story through hidden symbolism. So there's that in here as well. Perhaps not quite so hidden, but like, for example, the fact that my mother's wearing an apron is of significance because she came from a generation of women who expressed themselves through service to the family. That was what they lived for. My mother never had a job, in a sense of job that we think of, where you go out to work every day and get paid for it. Her job was us, was family. And when she arrived in Dunedin, we went to the airport to get her off the plane. We took her back, my husband and I, that is, I'm talking about, we took her back to our house on the peninsula and showed her where she was going to sleep. And I went into the kitchen. Next minute she comes in with her white pinny on, as she called it, her pinny. And that was her life of service. And perhaps that's why she's looking so tired, folks. She was doing for me. But also the landscape and the relationship that my mother's family had with the land. My grandmother was on the first shipload of white settlers. She was only 5 years old at the time, to Katikati, arriving in the Bay of Plenty. And my great-grandmother was a midwife who started the first maternity hospital there, and so on and so forth. So there's a whole sort of white colonial history tied up with my mother's side of the family. They were mostly farmers, people who worked the land. So they had a utilitarian relationship to the land, which I've sort of referenced here in these cleared away, very tidy, neat hills. So I'm just conscious of time. You can...
You're fine, Robert, but if, yeah, we could move on to the Kiribati works. I mean, does anyone, I think it might be nice to see if anyone has a question for Robert at this point before we move on. There's one.
This is not a question, but I just want to say, for me, this has always been one of the great New Zealand paintings. It's an icon, and I'm very comfortably next to Rehearing's Goddess of Mercy. I love seeing these two paintings together, and thank you.
Yes, it's really nice also to walk into this room and see the works in this relationship. With each other, yeah. And of course Rita Angus was another, I should really acknowledge her as a teacher as well. I only met her very briefly once in the Elvabet Gallery actually in 1969. I went to see Peter McLeavy and then wandered into the Elvabet Gallery and she was there. I was introduced to her. She said I ought to go and visit her sometime, but I was too scared. I thought, I didn't want to bother this great lady, you know. I wish I had, but her work has been an influence on me. And I noticed the beautiful, absolutely sublime Cass painting, which also has that same structure that I became aware of through looking at the, you know, the Roger van der Weyden, for example, with those marvelous series of diagonals, which you see also in Cass. It's that same inner structure, you know, which I was doing here with the reflections of Harlequin, being reflected through the figure of my mother and the way in which things tie up and form this sort of inner structure, which I think of as being like a human body in a sense. It has this, the bones that hold it together and then you flesh it out. Yeah.
Speaking of the way things tie up, when I was teaching art history, I always used to show this, of course, with the portrait of Betty Curnow by Angus.
Yeah.
So there was that. But I also couldn't resist bringing in Harlequin from Peggy's Hill by McCann, 1939. Was there any conscious connection for you between?
Yeah.
There was, yeah.
Well, I was living, this is actually what I saw from my studio window, this image of Harlequin. McCann was taking it from a different angle, but yes, I was aware of it. It's, shall we say, iconic.
Yes.
Otherwise known as Tittle. So it has that female look about it. The locals call it.
Thanks, Robin.
It's all on record. We go up the arcade and to the left by the seal. And can I just ask, please don't sit on the plinth for the seal. That's my only request.
Okay, 28 days in Kiribati. If I say chain of thought, you know what I mean, don't you? Naha. You have a thought and you might speak it out and someone says, where did that come from? And you think about it and you realize that you've arrived at it over a series of various steps and so on. In many ways, actually, I think art is like that, certainly in my experience. So when I look at this work, this series along here, 28 Days in Kiribati, I realize that it is part of this, sort of like a chain of thought, except in this case not thought so much as, although thought's obviously part of it, but a chain of works which preceded it and then which followed it. These images here came in the wake of the very first set of works that I did after arriving in Kiribati, which were called The Beginner's Guide to Gilbertese. And those works were the first things that I'd done where I'd carved wood and printed off wood. I was trained as a painter. In fact, I did abysmally in printmaking at Elon. I kept breaking the rules and didn't get too far with that. And I taught myself, basically, which wasn't too difficult. So I actually very much agree with what Fiona said. Well, it had resonances for me as well. You know, if you don't know something, that's not necessarily impediment to going ahead and doing what you have to do, you know. So I taught myself. And But prior to doing those first works in Kiribati, about 2 years before that, I'd visited Australia for the first time, and I'd been in Melbourne, and I'd visited the public gallery of Victoria. And in there is a magnificent painting by Hans Memling. Utterly stunning. It just blew me away. I mean, I can't remember anything else from that gallery except for that one painting. It's about the size of an A4 page, I think. And it's called The Man of Sorrows in the Arms of the Virgin, as I recall. But it, again, it's a Dutch painting. And because I'd been so in love with the Dutch painters as well as the Italians, I was delighted to find this Hans Memling, and I spent a lot of time looking at it. And this little painting has these little separate things happening around it that tell you the story of the suffering of Christ on his way to being crucified. And you know, that memory stayed with me. And when I got to Kiribati and started thinking about what am I going to do here, because there's no way I'm going to be painting oil on canvas. That would be ridiculous. I mean, here I am living on an atoll, which if you can, well, Robert Louis Stevenson said that living on an atoll is like living on board a ship, right? And all of the attention is on the crew. I mean, land is minimal, absolutely minimal, but you get these vast expanses of sea and sky. So there we were living on a beach, basically, and with a thatched roof and coconut midrib walls and things and people and animals of all sorts running in and out of the house. And I thought, I am not going to be painting here. This is not appropriate. And so what am I going to do? So I cast about for ideas and started drawing. And the drawings that I was doing led to the work that Beginner's Guide, which was also about me beginning to learn about a new culture, a new place, a new language, and so on and so forth. It was documenting that. But in order to document that, I was referring to back to a medieval woodcut tradition, which also had an educational function, and it also had that history or that way of combining visual and verbal messages. And so you see how a chain of thought works? And so having done the Beginner's Guide series and realizing that I actually enjoyed that process of carving into wood, and I actually also enjoyed that idea of a transferred image, which is essentially what a print is, I decided to carry on with that. It seemed to work quite well. So when my friend Claudia visited, Claudia Pondeli, who lives in Auckland, we went to art school together. And we flattered together, so, you know, we were old mates. She came with her 14-year-old daughter, Bridget, who was just starting to experiment with punk. And she had short hair of various shades of brown and red and quite alarming sort of face paint from time to time. And to land in a very traditional sort of environment on an atoll, straight out of Auckland and onto Tarawa was kind of interesting. And so I did drawings, I took photographs, I kept notes and so on, and produced a visual diary, which I called 28 Days in Kiribati, which was exactly the time, the length of time that Claudia and her daughter stayed with me. So what you see here was actually made as a book with other images as well. And I had learnt from doing the Beginner's Guide series that way in which you can build a narrative, build on the story by adding various pictorial elements as separate but integrated aspects of the image. So, for example, these are separate blocks, and I was able to combine them, recombine them in different ways in other prints that you don't actually see here, but which were part of the book. And you know, that's something that I got from going back to Hans Memling and then doing them. the beginner's guide and them doing this 28 days. So they're sort of like footnotes in a sense, adding to the central image. In these works, I'm observing a girl from, you know, the pop Western culture, arriving in a very essentially Pacific environment, and just moving in amongst it and meeting our neighbours and friends. And it was an opportunity to comment on the kind of things that she saw and experienced while she was there, like the kite flying episode, the food, the oxen palm. But there are other little references in these as well, which go back to earlier parts of my childhood. For example, the oxen palm, this one here, that image there, apart from being relating to the actual oxen palm brand of corned beef, also goes back to a book that my father gave me when I was 10 years old called A Picture History of Archaeology. And there's this wonderful image which was off it's an Egyptian wall painting in a tomb of a man in a condition of submission. But he's got this palm tree in front of him, and beneath him is this very stylized river pattern, which is repeated as an embossed image here. So there's all these kind of little funny little chains of memory and thought that's just part of art making. You know, you pick on your little kind of scrapbook of things that sits inside your head, and you pull things out that you need from time to time. Later work that I did after this series, I just thought I'd mention that because of seeing these works here. It was really lovely to see these and these, because I've also been tremendously interested in the way in which people from outside view the Pacific. I guess those of us from New Zealand sort of more or less think of us as being from the Pacific. And in my case, I was living in Kiribati and observing someone from outside arriving and interacting with my friends and neighbors who were in Kiribati. In this particular series here, it's very much like also that wonderful wallpaper, panoramic wallpaper designed by Charvet and Dufour, about the same size, same time as this, right? Called Les Sauvages de la Mer Pacifique, Savages of the Pacific. But in which people from around the Pacific are depicted in this classic way, you know, neoclassicism. And I make reference to that in later work, of course, Sine Mele Goes Fishing and the Fisherman Loses His Way. But you can start seeing elements of that here, for example, in the kite flies. And, anyway. I'm just conscious of time.
No, that's great. We might, if you're happy to wind up there, that would be great. Thank you, Robin. I'll wrestle the microphone away.
Sorry to interrupt. We want an enormous black mark on my CV for interrupting Robin White. But
no, you have to, because I'm bad
at Robin. No, that's terrific. And I mean, it's I'm sure for all of you, but I think maybe especially for me and my colleagues, the curators on the staff. It's just it's been nice looking at these things, but in some ways to have the artists here talking about them is like it's like the ignition switch has been flicked or something, or, you know, it's, you know, we've been listening in mono, but suddenly stereo kicks in. It's pretty great. So.